This month I'm talking on things that come up out of our wonderful classic Zen poem, The Song of the Precious Mirror Samadhi, which we recite in the morning service, which we all recited together last Sunday. And when once there's copies out in the front room. It's a poem filled with brightness and darkness, images of light and dark. And it's essential not to fall for a progress from darkness into light in this poem or anywhere else. There's so many books and so many paths that say we want to go from darkness into light. Kind of like the Christian and other traditions where you want to move from the body up to transcend into something somewhere else. So the body was something dark and there's a light up above and that's better. As if dark were confusion and light were truth. That's how it feels a lot. But this is a temptation that runs through our life. It's not just a misreading of a poem like this. It's very appealing to have clarity. It's very important to have clarity. And we want to put our faith in clarity. And this makes sense. It makes a lot of sense to our sort of linear thinking that there are ladders to climb and goals to reach and an obvious or clearly defined right apart from wrong. But black and white or on and off are usually a dangerous simplification. The truth is always more nuanced, more interesting, and more difficult. So this, our song of the precious mirror, addresses our whole mind and approach to life, not an idea about truth. Our life where we live when are confused about light and dark, for instance. What is light? What is clear? What is wisdom? What is darkness? This is each of us every day. And we have a sort of atavistic fear of darkness. And we have a great sense of sight as a species. I think it's unusual among animals. Dogs have a great sense of smell, very refined scent. Bats have this very refined hearing for echolocation. Not all bats, the different kinds of bats, but they all have tremendously good ears. Trees are out there monitoring red spectrum light to figure out where to grow. And a lot of animals and plants use a few colors, you know, for display and mating. I remember as a kid, I felt sort of disappointed that the females of the species, of birds especially, tended to be kind of little brown and gray things, and the males got to have all the bright colors. And then, eventually, I discovered that really the males were all those bright colors to attract the females and show their wares, and so I relaxed. But they mostly only have a few colors for the sake of, say, pollination or mating or things like that. And we are have our own world of senses, a very wide range of senses. In combination, and most especially sight and sound. Our sound hearing is very refined in a very narrow range. I think that's also one of the problems then, is people lose hearing because we have a very narrow range to begin with, you know, loss of even a few places in that range. You miss something. So I've just discovered that I thought the peepers were gone. The last few years, I just haven't heard peepers much, unless they're right outside my window. When I was up on Burnside, they'd sit right outside my bedroom window and yak at me all night. But other than that, well, I wondered what had happened to the peepers. What happened to the peepers was that I lost that particular decibel in my hearing range. That's all. And I didn't know it until Ty said, "Oh, the peepers are." And I said, "Oh, they are." And I listened. And so, but we have a very acute ability within a rather narrow range. Other animals hear above or below. But within that range, it's very subtle. Language requires a very subtly differentiated hearing within this narrow range. Our sight is in the same way, very nuanced, within a very narrow spectrum. You know, in exchange for subtlety of differentiation of edges and borders, and you know, to another creature, actually Richard and Holly might look sort of alike, but not to my eye. Now, for me, the connections are knowing that they have connection, not by looking. By looking at them, I see all these differences, the edges and the shapes of noses and mouths and eyes and eyebrows and all those things. And we see color and detail and edge. We synthesize and we abstract. So we have a great subtlety in exchange for a very narrow range, which again becomes a great limitation when you start to have lose some of that range. Sight is, we're kind of sight hounds, humans, and to a great deal degree. And so we use images of sight for insight. Oh, I see, we say. When someone says something, we're not looking at anything in particular. And light illuminates our world for these eyes. So we love light. Why would we not? If it illuminates and makes it possible for us to utilize these great little seeing organs. Lets us see incredible things. And we love light for what it allows us to do with these eyes and to bring them to their kind of a fruition. We can use them because light allows us to. Darkness doesn't seem to allow us to, and so we feel not allowed to expand to our full potential in dark. More than that, we don't know what to do at all because we so rely on our sight. So we tend to feel very comforted in light, except when we want to hide something, right? The Zen says, yes, light is indeed a time of understanding or clarity in terms of distinctions, in terms of details, in terms of seeing clearly. But that's not the only kind of clarity. That's our usual one. And we tend to think that's what clarity is about distinctions and the details, the edges and the colors. It's not that it's not about that, but that's not the whole story. And we can take that sense of light illuminating our world so that we can see distinctions and turn it kind of around, saying lacking vision, clear insight is a bright light from within that has nothing to do with eyes. When we speak of insight, we're not talking about the sun. We're talking about a light coming from within that we usually still think of in terms of delineating details and distinctions. And that's fine. The light of insights, it helps us be self-aware, know ourselves. You couldn't have a moral value or act on it if you didn't have that kind of clear delineating insight, light from inside. It's tremendously important in our lives. It's as important in terms of being ourselves as the light from outside. The light from within, these two kinds of light are very important, but there's a way in which they're both operating in terms of distinctions, edges, details, understanding in terms of ideas. This is a very important. And the inner light, as much as an outer light, shines a light on dark places that are dark with confusion, where our own darkness or lack of light from within is confusion. That's what confusion is. It doesn't mean that all darkness is confusion. But this relationship to light as the clarity of a light from outside and from inside is in... the light from inside, more importantly, is the in Shakyamuni Buddha's last words, the so-called last words. They're the mythically last words. Something he did say near the end of his life and that then was compacted into his last words, where he says, yourself is a light, abide there, take refuge in the illuminating self and nowhere else. The Dharma is a light, he says. Abide there, take refuge in the Dharma and nowhere else. Let your awareness be a light. Let the Dharma be a light. I've been thinking, actually, of adding that in its Pali to our morning service, because there's a Pali version of this that I think many of you know that's very beautiful. It's I sing it when I'm driving along in the car, actually. Atta dipa viharada atta sarana anana sarana. Put the light you can sing about in the darkness, right? Dhamma dipa viharada dhamma sarana anana sarana. I like the song, the sung version, because sung you can sing in the darkness, of our own darkness or confusion. That kind of light. So the Dharma and self-awareness are reliable refuges. This self-awareness is very much the same as Uchiyama Roshi saying that Zazen is your truest teacher. That's the self-awareness as a refuge. And Zazen is a way of being this, living out self, this self of self-awareness that Shakyamuni is talking about. So Zen says, yes, truth shines clearly in the light. And it also says truth is revealed in the darkness, as much as in light. You know, we can't see in the dark, and sight is what we rely on, so the dark becomes a threat. But every one of us has sat into the darkness, into the dusk and the gloaming and the darkness, perhaps with a friend talking, and the later and the darker, the more ease there is in that conversation, and the more that can be expressed and revealed. Maybe with just a candle, a little bit of light. We like a little bit of light, but we don't, at that time, we don't need it, because we, in some sense, know where we are. The moon and stars are visible at night. We mostly prefer sex in the dark. Not to hide, we're not Victorians anymore. This isn't to hide something away, but to allow other senses to come forward. Not to be relying always on some idea of one dominant sense. So light is seeing differences clearly. That's what light does, from outside and from inside. There's a way in which that understanding is that light is about, or enlightening seems to be about, seeing differences clearly. And that's one of the big mistakes about ideas about enlightenment, that it's going to be some bright light where we'll see everything very clearly. And the darkness is the place of undifferentiated wisdom, which we need so much to know in our lives. How is it when the world of comparisons and details, that world doesn't fill our minds? What's that like? We aren't blank when the details recede, when the edges and colors are less vivid or not present. It's easy to be drawn then into a world of old fears, because the things are vague, and things come up from within, and one of the things that comes up from within are all our old fears, and then they get played out again. And the absence of stuff to focus on is quite difficult for us. There's a kind of one of the resistances to sitting down and doing zazen. It's not just that we're so busy, which is, of course, I belong in the world of stuff and detail and difference, and I feel alive with all the differences going along. Bling, bling. We're all bling, bling creatures, actually, right? The resistance is to letting go of that being, knowing ourselves by all the little twinkly vibrations that we like and don't like, and painful little pinpricks as well, of all the world of detail and difference. And to let go of that some feels like we're going to let go of our identity and our who we are. And it isn't like that at all. When we walk out in the night air of our lives, or the literal night air, in the middle of the night, I like walking outside at about 2 in the morning. It's one of the advantages of sleep disorders. There's some great walking out in the middle of the night. It's really, really nice. It's a time for appreciating the world as numinous. When I'm fearful of the dark, I have no such awareness. When I feel at ease in the dark, then the darkness is very beautiful. And then we're reminded, I am, that reality is not only in the details. And I can feel then how the details of daytime distract me from the underlying harmonies of life. What the precious mirror samadhi, the poem, the song says, is, in darkest night it is perfectly clear, in the light of dawn it is hidden. In the darkest night, truth or reality, your own true nature is perfectly clear. In the light of dawn, it is hidden. Underlying reality is bright at midnight, while in the light of day, it's very hard to see. So this Master Dongshan, who wrote this poem, is building on what his predecessor had to say. The other poem that we recite other mornings is, and I've talked about other times, The Harmony of Difference and Sameness, Master Shito, maybe 200 years before Master Dongshan. And so the one famous poem was a real foundation for the other one to build on. In the same way, we build on both of these for our own understandings. What Shito and the predecessor said in our great harmony of difference and sameness said, he said, the spiritual source shines clearly in the light. The branching streams flow on in the dark. I kind of understood that somehow we would see spiritual in the light, clarity, light, but the branching streams flow on in the dark. I heard these lines for the first time when Katagiri Roshi was lecturing at Hokyoji in Minnesota in a session. A very dark, wet session. One of the first times I was there. I heard these lines. I think he talked on them for several days. It felt like that. Those were the only lines there were in the whole poem as far as I was concerned. Especially the branching streams flow on in the dark. It was deeply reassuring. I didn't understand it. And it didn't matter because what I understood was that there were depths for me to be aware of, and that there's a way and a place of being aware of depths. That was deeply reassuring. I didn't have to understand. It was about not understanding in the ways I knew how to understand. I had a great analytical education. I know how to analyze. I know how to cogitate, ratiocinate occasionally. But to know that there's a way of knowing, understanding, and being at home in depths that are not accessed by that kind of process and yet are there for me. The branching streams flow on in the dark. This, maybe it was just the sense of depths and depths as a positive thing. Here my beloved teacher is talking, and I'm in a pretty safe place except it's very wet and cold and dark. And I hear about depths as something as my world. We tend to be fearful of those depths. You know, the ocean's depths are called the abyssal deeps, or the lowest layers of the ocean are called abyssal. And the abyss I think it's named out of our fear. Bottomless gulf, pit, chaos, those are the core meanings of abyss. But I can look without understanding those abysses, that abyssal depth, I can see evidence of it. I go to the beach and I see evidence of it. Strange and beautiful seaweeds and shells and waves and storms, whales, mystery. I think one of the reasons we go to the edge of the sea is to be reminded of vastness and of depth as well, and to know that this is somehow we are truly connected to it and we don't understand it. But the depths remind me always to see my own depths, to feel in some way my depths and yours, that they are there. So that kind of awareness kindles over and over, rekindles our awareness and appreciation for depths for which we have some evidence, but the evidence is not the whole of it. I was reassured where I didn't know I needed reassurance by this poem saying, "The branching streams flow on in the dark." That the darkness is where we find great truths of merging and continuing. In the undivided dark, all the many branching streams are flowing on unhindered without my having to mess with it or take responsibility or be in control. Maybe it's most especially the message of not having to be in control that was so intriguing and reassuring. In the undivided dark, the many branching streams of our lives continue on. The many branching streams of the wellsprings of our life and of all life continue on, without our having to do anything about it. And without our having to do anything about it or control it, we can find and know and learn how to base our life on that awareness, that presence, so that it's not just hidden from view. The spiritual source is always shining clearly out of the heart of each thing. That's the way of describing the light that comes up from within to illuminate our lives and each other. And shining from one thing to another, illuminating all the delicate corners. And we can learn to shine that light on our own lives and on the world. That light that comes out of the spiritual source, out of the darkness, shining into the light. We tend to think we'll shine the light on dark places to illuminate them, but we need to learn to shine the light that comes out of darkness onto the world with the many different things. We can learn a great deal in the dark and from the dark what can't be learned in books. So Dogen Zenji said, "Turn your light within and illuminate the self." Those are his restatement, really, of those same last words of Shakyamuni. Be a light unto yourself. Illuminate what it is to be you by turning the light of your life within to look. So those are Shakyamuni's words for it and Dogen's words for it, and each of us finds our own words for it. Or our own feeling of it. Doesn't have to be words. Our own sense of what it means that there is a kind of light in the middle of darkness and a darkness in the middle of light, and that that's not a problem. Master Shito, from the Harmony of Difference and Sameness, said, "In the unified truth of darkness, in the all the many different paths, all the branching streams are present, active, and continuing, though we don't see them that way." And so Dongshan said, "Yes, and that means that the truth is really clear in the dark. The truth shines all colors equally." This is what I gave talks a few months ago on equality, the equality of all things. In the light, for instance, if you take a scale, we want to see if things are equal. In the daylight, we'll put them on a scale, we'll weigh the side, we'll look at the little measure, we'll calibrate numbers. That's how we understand equality and difference in the daytime, or in that kind of outer light, in the light of differentiation, which is not only an outer light. This the qualities, the hallmark of the dark, where equality is not a matter of is this maroon or is this silver and is this 2 ounces or is this 4 ounces. This is the equality of all things where we have all a shared equal nature as life coming forth as life. The equality of all things are Buddha nature. All things are Buddha nature is our shorthand phrase for the equality of all things. So Shito said, it's dark at midnight, and all the phenomena flow unhindered in this darkness along their many paths without our having to poke our heads in it. That's how Katagiri would put it. He always liked to say, don't poke your head in it. And Dongshan said, light is bright at midnight, where one great source energy is clearly revealed to us. Learning to see with that kind of clarity when we've spent so long refining our eyes the way the optometrist does with different lenses. We want this lens, this lens, this lens, this lens. We're very refined in which of the lenses he shows is going to give us a tiny bit clearer image. That's not the kind of approach that works for understanding the undifferentiated or equality of our lives. In the bright light of noon, when we're out there seeing and discriminating, we have to. It's a wonderful thing to do. You can't write a poem without doing that. You can't recognize a face without certain kind of living in terms of details and discriminating and differentiating, whether it's sight or voice or whatever we use. We live so much in those terms. Seeing in terms of, living in terms of things and edges. That time, it's hard to see how all things are connected because we're seeing how all things are cut apart. So at noon, we're really in the dark because all we can see or appreciate or live in terms of is edges and things and differences and things that give rise to other things. Then we're really in the dark about the sort of underlying nature of all things that is present in all the differentnesses but is not just made of all the differentnesses. Sitting is a way to know and experience this shared nature, the spiritual source with our eyes open. It's a way to bring those two worlds together. You're sitting, you're aware of your body being here, and you aware of it not only when it hurts, you're aware of it anyway. You're being present in this body at this time. And the stillness of this body is a kind of a participating in that darkness because it's a kind of undifferentiatedness. That's part of the effort. We can be very aware. There's a real effort of sitting, holding still in Zazen. It's not only a physical effort of holding the body still. And it's not a mental control effort, because that's not our Zazen. But there's a kind of effort where we are making the effort not to be living in terms of distinctions and differences in the thought, and the this thought, my good Zazen, my bad Zazen, what time will it be over, my body hurts, all of the details and differences. The effort to be still is the effort to be present in this, an undifferentiated life. At the same time that you're here with your eyes open and in a differentiated world. At the same time. Both flowing at once. So this very stillness of Zazen is the time and place of undifferentiated life taking place in the middle of our differentiated life. And it's always available. I discovered this last night. So last night, a few of us were having dinner together, and there was a demonstration of the Wii. Does anyone else have anyone? But I don't have it. Charlie has the Wii. She uses this for fitness. So she was demonstrating. Wii is this. It's this. How do you describe it? It's a series of computer games or things on put on your computer with. Things you hold in your hand and a foot sport that you can do all kinds of exercises and sports with. It monitors what your feet are doing and what your hand is doing, and it shows you on the screen what you're doing. It's very interactive, and mostly it's kind of cute cartoons. It's really very interesting, too. So there's all these different sports, and you can jog, you can do kung fu, you can juggle, you can do giant slalom, you can do ski jumping, and you're working with those things usually on just one piece of your body at a time. Right? Well, mostly people starting out are pretty bad. I once did the ski jump, and it showed me, having missed the takeoff point, turning into a giant snowball, rolling down the slope. But I found my sport yesterday. Charlie had this thing. Here's another screen. Here's 9 or 10 things you can do. Here's another dozen. And down in the corner, it was a little candle in the darkness. And it's something like Zen sitting. I said, I want to try that. I want to try that one. She said, oh, it's boring. I said, no, that sounds just right. So I sat down cross-legged on this little board thing. And I just sat down. I guess I figured that it was about being still. I just sat there, and this candle slowly diminished, and moths went around and around and around the flame, and occasionally it went zap on the screen, and then footsteps came in, the master with his big kiyosaka, and then it went away again, and then they all came back and went away a couple times, and I just sat there. I have my Olympic sport. I was a champion the first time out. I had a perfect score. Of course, I guess I've been practicing for a long time. And I was very, very happy during those 3 or 4 minutes. I'd had a nice time. I'm just sitting here having a quiet evening with friends. A quiet evening with friends is talking and having something to drink and then looking at the yard and talking about our houses and the corned beef and the cabbage and the and the this and the that and the dog and the cat. Even though it's a quiet, amiable evening with friends, it's very complex. And then I just got to sit still. It was so good. Because, if you've done this enough, this boring sport, you know that it's very vivid. Dropping down, I felt very settled and at ease for those 3 or 4 minutes, and it was very pleasurable. Our undifferentiated life is available at all times, even in front of this funny little computer screen with a candle going down. It was a surprise to me how quickly and how deliciously could drop into this experience of just being present. Light and dark, both there. The world was out there. They were still there. I was sitting on this funny little plastic board. My ankle hurt because it was kind of hard, And there were these strange things happening on the screen, and maybe my friends were being bored, but this was my task, was just to sit there, and by God, I can do that. So that simplification, in a way, right, and a certain effort, but it wasn't very much because it was only 3 or 4 minutes. For me, that wasn't really, didn't push my limits. But still, there's dropping into a place where darkness is there. It's just all that other stuff wasn't happening anymore. It was present in the background, but it wasn't what I was doing. I was doing this being just present and aware. It's quite delicious. Quite delicious. To have something, even a computer screen, it was one TV screen, remind me, give me an opportunity, because we need these little opportunities. We, like kids, always need timeouts. Because we forget. We forget that we want to, that there's another side. Because we're so busy with this deliciousness of all our senses going. So this kid, at least, needs a little help with the timeouts called, now it's time to go sit zazen. Or now it's time to sit down on a little Wii board. Whatever it is. And it's time to sit down. And what has been hidden from view will now be revealed and present. Because it's there. Always. Right in the middle of that. It was always there. Present. Always available to enter and to drop down to. The wholeness of life, the interconnected flow of life, it's always there at all times, even on a Wii board. And it's really one of the most important jobs of our, in a sense, or of our human life, is to know that other side, the side of the undifferentiated wisdom of life, not instead of, if anything, it makes me more appreciative of the world of discrimination and detail, that refinement, because I'm not quite so compelled by it. I can enter it and leave it, and then I can enjoy it more, and then I can get compelled by it, and eventually I will find my way back to Zazen and the other side. But to bring those two together, to live in terms of both, that's a fulfilling of our human life and our potential, so that we don't get caught then in black versus white, and right versus wrong, in sectarianism, and all those terrible isms and either-ors that the human mind is prey to. It's easier to see that side, the side of equality, which we need to integrate with the side of differentness. It's not that it's better, or one is better, or the other is worse. It's integrating the two. That's what it is to be human. But we need to go into the dark and find our way to be at ease with a kind of darkness, a kind of undifferentiated light, so that we can integrate the two and let each shine a light on the other. Light and dark together make one person. Has anybody else tried this on the Wii?
No one else? Yeah, I'm a trailblazer.
We have to go places we don't expect to go. All of us. Anyone have any thoughts?